You're listening to a 95BFM podcast.
Although I do have a content warning for you, we will be discussing the March Against Sexual Violence, therefore sexual violence as well. Unfortunately, the march was rained off last weekend, but it is on this weekend, Altea Square, 2pm Sunday the 18th, and Lily Chen, who is the chair of Campus Feminist Collective at the University of Auckland and is also part of Auckland's Feminist Action, chatted to me about the march, how it came about, and all about intersectional feminism. I started off by asking her what the plan is for Sunday.
The plan for Sunday is to unite feminist groups from across Tamaki Makaurau in an issue that we're all incredibly passionate about, and harness that energy and channel it into our protest.
Cool, brilliant. And what do you do as part of Auckland Feminist Action?
I'm actually within the group in my capacity as a chairwoman of Campus Feminist Collective. So I actually am a student at Auckland University. I am a second year law student, and I'm actually the youngest person in that group. Right now I am learning from the best. There are so many amazing women within the group that are learning from. Their moms, their working women, and it's an incredible learning experience. I am simply sitting behind and watching them, learning the ropes from them and picking up slack when they need me to.
And it's such an amazing kaupapa that you're getting behind with this march. How did it come about?
The march came about because Break the Silence New Zealand, which is fronted by an incredible 15-year-old who experienced personal issues of sexual violence on her own, and she wanted to bring her passion for the subject onto a national front. She felt inspired by the protest down Wellington, and she wanted to channel the energy in Tamaki.
And so there's a set of demands that you guys have set out, and I was wondering if we could talk about those a little bit and what you hope to achieve with this march.
Oh, absolutely. We are hoping for the immediate implementation of harm reduction systems, consent education, and more funding into violence interventionist services. I personally can speak to consent education as someone who's freshly out of high school. I had an incredible health teacher who taught me about the value of healthy relationships. Since year 11, I took health education to year 13. However, health education isn't compulsory in the curriculum, and most students tend to drop out at year 10 and year 11, even before hitting the age of consent at 16. So by the time they're entering into university, there is a few years of knowledge that they're missing, and that they may be utilizing within the university sphere. I feel like there's a deficit in the system, considering that we need to have that conversation continuously throughout the year, and it needs to be more comprehensive than what we have right now.
It's kind of like there's been a bit of a global movement at the moment in this area. There's been marches all over the world, especially in the UK after Sarah Everard's death, and then in Wellington. How are you building on this worldwide movement?
I think the worldwide movement arose from collective rage, just devastation. And it came to a crisis point when we said, enough is enough, we need to do something about it. And right now, at the early stages, we are making our voices heard within the protest capacity. And for us, for our movement, we have our list of demands, and I suspect that other organizations, other movements, would also have their own tailored list of demands for their own country, for their own region. I think this is about women taking the reins and demanding what is necessary for us to feel safe in our own streets.
Absolutely. And what do you expect the reaction to be?
I expect outrage. I expect, you live in New Zealand, we are the first country to give women the right to vote, why are you complaining? We have received some backlash already, and it isn't entirely pleasant. But if you aren't people mad at you, I don't think you're doing something right.
Exactly. Yeah. Also, I wanted to touch on the issue with, say, white politicians using race and biases to support their argument to why women feel unsafe. I'm talking specifically about Nicola Willis blaming the increase in social housing in Wellington, and in her words, increase of gangs, therefore, as a woman, to feel unsafe. What's kind of the issue around this rhetoric?
I think it's quite scapegoaty, and her analysis lacks intersectionality. She definitely failed to acknowledge how the patriarchy plays into this.
And that people have always felt unsafe in Wellington, and it's not just...
Oh yeah, absolutely. Look at the news. Yeah. I do want to speak to my experiences and my community experiences as a woman of colour.
Mm-hmm.
And as a woman of colour, we often feel invisibilized and sidelined when it comes to policy liberal approaches, because politicians believe in a one-size-fits-all mentality, and it simply doesn't work.
Yeah.
This is why we need to increase funding to culturally relevant services to cater for the inherent differences within communities, or else the funding that we pour into women's care actually doesn't account for a large percentage of all women.
And how do you feel about, as a woman of colour, the whitewashing of activism that also goes on? I know there's been an issue of that lately with the climate marches.
Absolutely. I didn't personally attend a climate march, not because I didn't want to, I slipped through my alarm. The lack of intersectionality in activism isn't something that surprises me, but it disappoints me immensely, because I don't know who said this, and I'm probably quoting it wrong, but if you're not liberating all women, your liberation doesn't really count. When you fail to include intersectionality in your activism, you're exacerbating the marginalization of vulnerable communities who require you to advocate for them. And as an activist, you do have a platform to do so, yet you're selectively choosing one group of people to elevate.
And with the march on Sunday, how, I suppose, hero intersectional activism?
I'm not
sure. Or is that an issue?
Yeah, it was an issue before, but we have been dealing with it internally. As intersectional feminists, we must remember that we need to hold our counterparts accountable, especially when white feminism is the functional equivalent to mainstream feminism. So what we've been doing is that we've been having those internal conversations, having the quarrel within our organization, and holding our constituents accountable, of course, because we can all learn from our mistakes. That's how we better ourselves as activists. As of currently, I would like to think that our core purpose is quite intersectional, because we have an incredible woman of colour, Helen, who was here last week, I'm pretty sure,
mm-hmm.
me, and a few Wahine Maori within our organising team. It's definitely not Pākehā led, and the Pākehā woman who have been mentoring me has always been centering my voice in the conversation. They've been actively asking for my opinions, so I don't feel tokenized in my organisation. I actually feel like I'm contributing. It definitely is a departure from what I'm used to within white feminist organising spheres.
That's so positive to hear. I'm really stoked to hear that. It is interesting that you say, like, it was an issue at the start, but you have to work through it. And I think that just speaks so much to what we have to do is the default often is what we start off with, and we do have to put in the work to get past that. But I'm stoked that your voice is being centralised, and that it will come through in the march on Sunday, I'm sure.
I absolutely hope so.
Auckland Feminist Action member That was Lily Chen. She's also the chair of the Campus Feminist Collective at the University of Auckland, and she was talking to me about the March Against Sexual Violence, which is happening this Sunday. So if there's something you support, encourage you to get down to Aotea Square, 2 p.m. Sunday the 18th, and go march and be part of it and stand up for what you believe.
That was a 95BFM podcast. To hear more, head to 95BFM.com/bcasts.